Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Altruism has always been a big part of the punk scene. We put on shows, promote each other's bands, and when it comes to mental health, we are there to support each other. We don't do these things for monetary gain. We do them because we're punks, and that's how we roll. Tim Andrell is the kind person behind Sweet Cheetah PR and Records. Tim takes the altruistic model a bit further. In exchange for promoting bands, Tim asks that in return, the bands support a cause of their choice. For example, making a donation, or volunteering at a mental health organization. Studies have shown that volunteering has a positive impact on mental health. By doing his work pro bono, Tim is able to balance his personal life with his tireless efforts in the underground music scene. And by donating his time and energy, Tim helps underrepresented voices in the punk scene get the attention they deserve.
My name is Tim Andrell, and I live in Dayton, Ohio, and I began going to punk shows around the age of 14 and continue to participate in what I would consider as the punk music subculture, even still at age 47. In 1997, I began writing about music on a freelance basis, which I've continued. And then around 12 years ago, I started to do publicity work, mainly for friends and referrals to help them to remove some barriers to entry, namely the cost associated with PR for my friends pursuing that, then also offering it to a wide variety of people. People of color, LGBTQIA plus artists, and trying to get them visibility within larger media circles related to music. About a half a year ago, last November, I actually pivoted also into releasing music. So my mental health journey has taken place over the course of my entire life, although as somebody who was born in the 70s and came to age as a teenager in the 80s and 90s, it was a little stigmatized to talk openly about mental health, both just in general discussion with other individuals, as well as it wasn't a point of discussion in my particular family unit. This thing that I just assumed were skeletons in the closet, or what some people would term, well, that person has demons. So I really grew up feeling like my mental health struggles, particularly with depression and anxiety, were my own fault. And it really took until I was an adult and was encouraged by some loved ones to talk to a therapist or to pursue medication for depression and anxiety that I really started to become involved in any kind of discourse about what were the appropriate things to do to take care of myself and my own mental health. I have been diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder as well as post-traumatic stress disorder. And then I also know that I have some personal challenges when it comes to self-compassion. That particular thing is exacerbated by my depression and anxiety. So a combination of having a medical regimen with regards to meds, and then I've been in and out of therapy for several years, that's really helped me to address what I considered growing up as those demons that were constantly riding me or making me feel less than or guilty about things that were going on.
You've surrounded yourself with a community in the music scene, and not only that, but you've actually become a leader in that scene as far as helping people get their music out there, and also the donations that people that you worked with have made to charity, and it's a pretty huge amount of money. I'm assuming that the struggles that you had through youth pointed you towards a place where you could feel like you were contributing and that you were part of a community and that the people around you could maybe hold you up when you needed it and vice versa.
Sure. Yeah, I was really lucky to have met some people that I just consider lifelong trusted friends and mentors along the way. One of the things that I really value about those people is that their interest in me is not surface level. They are people that will check in on me periodically as a person am functioning in the world around me, which, you know, can be challenging for everyone. There's constantly sort of this spinning chaos around us as people, as we're inundated with information, changes in the world, pressures, stresses. And I think it's easy to feel abandoned and lost in those stresses and pressures. I've really been thankful for those that come in and pull me out of that and ask me to check in with them, because it's really a litmus test for me too, as to, are my meds working? Am I doing the right things? Am I going through the appropriate processes with regards to cognitive behavioral therapy to temper some of those irrational thoughts? And depression is just insidious anyway, right? It's going to trick you into believing that things that aren't necessarily true about yourself, things like nobody likes me or nobody wants to be around me or I'm not any good, those kinds of things. So it's nice to have a community of people that allow me to check that for myself. With regards to the community of people that I've really tried to cultivate as a result of the work that I'm doing with Sweet Cheetah Publicity, keeping it to friends and referrals and open to people of all religions, genders, sexual preferences, skin colors, has been really important to me, because I think that's how you are able to know that you are doing more good in the world than harm in the world. I think the more voices that you have coming in and sharing their experiences as a human on the planet, the more visibility you have, the reasons why the world around you does what it does. So having that kind of inclusive atmosphere has always been important to me. And then kind of the way that I do things, rather than wanting to charge my friends for a skill set that I believed that I had, what I really wanted to do was to offer that to them in exchange for a couple of things. So the first exchange rate that I have with folks that I work with is there something in your community, some kind of community action that you can trade me time on? So is there something that you're really passionate about that you'd like to do while I'm doing the PR work for you? Part of that is just to get people interested in finding what their strengths are and then using those to build up their community around them. I also think it's good to encourage people to use their strengths to do positive things in their communities. And then the second sort of exchange rate that I've had is, rather than send people a bill for my work, I ask them to find a charitable organization that they're passionate about, and then to determine what kind of a contribution they'd like to make to that organization. And I've seen those contributions be really small and powerful, as well as really large. I've seen bands be able to make a monetary donation of a couple thousand dollars to a charity organization. I've also seen folks who didn't have a tremendous amount of monetary resources available to them say, well, maybe I could write letters to kids at St. Jude's who are going through an experience and offer them encouragement. Neither one of those is more important to me. What's most important to me personally is that in having this discussion with the folks that I'm working with, they've taken that to heart and given it some thought. So I'm not the charity police or the go out and donate your time and money police, but I'm encouraging that there's a conversation, that there's better ways than we can be using our time, talents, and resources.
You do a lot of work pro bono, which is essentially what you're talking about, with that exchange. And you've done a good job, from what I can tell, just balancing your life. And a lot of folks that work in the music industry just push so hard, and all of a sudden they're working 70 hours a week. And you do this work in the way that you do it, in a way to allow yourself not to have to burn out or to have to overextend yourself. So in a sense, you're creating a situation where you can take care of your health.
Sure. So there are times, to be honest with you, where I feel like I'm the giving tree and I've overextended myself or overcommitted myself to things. And then it's a balancing act of my time and my personal commitments to keep my life moving in the way that it is. But also, you're right. So by donating my time and doing this work pro bono, it also allows me to prioritize my personal life in a way that folks who are doing this professionally maybe can't. There have been times where I've run into situations where it's like, you know, I should really get this done, but I'm also on the way out the door to take my kid to a swim lesson or a soccer practice or something. And then I really have to make sure that I'm balancing my priorities appropriately. And my priority is always going to be my family unit, you know, my son and I, and making sure that he has what he needs. So in that way, you're absolutely right. By not having to attach that professional attachment to that work, it does allow me to balance things quite a bit better. And then I have an unrelated day job. So that's what I use to pay my bills. And I've been really fortunate to do that for many, many years. And then to be able to pursue music writing and PR as a passion project. I also understand there are people that pursue music writing professionally and PR professionally. I don't have a bad thing to say about those people. I count a lot of those people as my friends. And it's hard too to see recently sort of the climate of massive layoffs and, you know, shrinking resources with regards to music press and opportunities. And I really feel for those folks as they're experiencing that too.
When I was diagnosed and was becoming way more aware of my condition, but also mental health in general, I started to notice that a lot of the press releases I was getting had mental health as an angle in them. And I hate to call it an angle, but mental health was a topic that was brought up in the press releases, whether it was specifically about the person in the band or whether it was the lyrics that were addressing those issues. And I'm wondering what it looks like for you, because you deal with so many different people on both sides of that coin. And have you noticed an increase in mental health talk and those topics being broached in the punk scene? It's always been there since the beginning, but as a prominent thing recently, let's say the last 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have noticed that. So one of the other things that I've noticed, having worked with several artists who are in recovery from addiction issues, is that there's kind of a commonality with regards to those folks in that they started using substances not only just to have a way to blow off steam or to have fun, but as a coping mechanism for some sort of underlying mental health issue or trauma that they'd experienced. And I think you can hear that as a common thread. as you listen to podcasts where people talk candidly about recovery or about burnout, which is easy to do in the music industry, where you're, in order to be successful, you really have to be on the road, you know, the majority of the time. And traveling in a van, even a tour bus, is not an ideal lifestyle for everyone. So I think it's part of the thing that kicked down the door to more candid and frank discussions about mental health was the Me Too movement and people being more candid and frank about instances where artists had abused their power dynamic. And you can even see the difference in the way that music press was presented in the 70s versus today, where that sort of sex, drugs, rock and roll lifestyle was very much accepted back then as sort of being the standard. And now today, it's very different. And I think part of the reason why the conversation has also opened up is that you have more participation from more groups of people. So you don't just have participation in this sort of conversation by young white men. You also have women and people of color and gender diversity who are involved in this discussion. And like I mentioned earlier in the conversation where I said, I think it's important to have the maximum amount of participation in punk as a subculture so that you get the most widest swath of ideas. I think that as we see different kinds of people being really participating successfully in the subculture and sharing their art, you're going to see those conversations change and evolve over time. So to your point, I think you're absolutely correct in that people are being more truthful about what they've experienced and why it is that they've chose to channel their talents in the ways that they have. And they don't necessarily have to hide anymore that the music that they're making comes from a place that's kind of dark, or that it comes from a place that was a struggle for them.
I've always considered talking about mental health as an act of being punk rock, as an act of resistance and FU. And so a lot of people don't talk about it. There's lots of talk about the stigma around it. Well, I think that in the punk rock scene, we're already stigmatized in certain ways, whether it's spiky hair or the political beliefs we have or the activism that we do. So to talk about mental health isn't such a big deal in some ways, because we're already used to talking about stuff that people don't talk about. What I've seen is more and more of the press releases and bands talking about these issues is that it's almost like when punk rock became this sort of mainstream thing, let's say with Green Day or whatever, and then more and more punk bands started popping out of the woodwork. And I think it's kind of the same idea where we've talked about this stuff for a long time, but now that more people are talking about it, it's just kind of spread to the point where in some ways mental health issues is kind of a given for a lot of artists.
Sure. I don't know necessarily that I personally would lead a conversation to a place like if I was at my son's soccer game and there was another dad or mom there with a Green Day shirt. Like, I don't know that I would be like, how's your mental health? But also, I do know that music provides a source of commonality for a lot of people. Just in our brief experiences, even setting up this interview, I knew that we came from at least a set of commonalities. And I think it's a lot easier to talk candidly with somebody that you know you already have something in common with than it is to, say, you know, encounter somebody in your daily life that you may not necessarily get those sort of social cues from, and then have that kind of a truthful or more candid exchange with.
When you think back to when you first got into this scene and how that's progressed over the years, from the music writing to doing the PR stuff and releasing records, how has that either helped or hurt your anxiety and your PTSD and your depression? Have you noticed a correlation between those two things?
Well, so one of the things that I do notice, and I think it is largely to do with the way that chemicals interact in my body, is that I feel like I need that charge of accomplishment to have the right amount of endorphins to feel like a productive human being. So I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, that I constantly need to feel like I'm accomplishing things. So that's one thing I think about quite a bit. The deadlines can get stressful too at times and trigger thoughts and feelings. And sometimes I find that I have to just shut the computer down and shut my brain down for an evening and do something else that's not related to the musical pursuits that are taking place, just to get some time and distance and some opportunity to really process, are the feelings that I'm having as a result of this rational feelings? Are they things that really are as dire or as stressful as they seem to be? And then work through those for a bit and then come back to it with a little bit more, with a better ladder of inference with regards to how to respond to those things. I feel like I'm better served as a fan of music and as a human being by being involved in these things. I feel like it's enriching for me as a person. It gives me a point of connection to people, and it helps me to nurture relationships that I've had for a really long time. So a lot of the artists that I've supported with PR activity over the last 12 years are people that I've known for like 30 years that just started out as friends with cool ideas or cool bands. And they're people that I just wanted to continue to have a relationship with. And now I know that I have some talents that can support what they're doing. So that always feels really good. But paramount to all of that is just being able to maintain those friendships and let people know that I care about them, whether or not I'm writing a press release to support their most recent record or able to show up to their shows. You know, sometimes I can't go to every show because of things going on in my personal life as a 47-year-old dad of an 8-year-old. But it does allow me to continue to have that connection point. In my younger years, like, I wondered when I would grow out of this punk rock, hardcore phase, as it were. But so much of my personal and ethical vantage point has been informed by punk and hardcore and the people that I've met participating in the subculture that I can't imagine now sort of quiet quitting and walking away from this.
That was my conversation with Tim Andrell of Sweet Cheetah PR, at Sweet Cheetah PR on Instagram. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to ScreenTherapyHQ.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to ScreenTherapyHQ.com. For merch, check out the newly opened store at ScreenTherapyHQ.com/store And for even more designs, check out Scream Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Scream Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Scream Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at ScreamTherapyHQ.com or email me at ScreamTherapyPodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.